Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Greetings, Earthlets, on today's Near Earth Orbit Bulletin. Champions League, round two. Arsenal, after Hull wreck, find calm in Porto, while Chelsea and Transylvania, lack bite, finish neck and neck. We salute Cluj and the other Champions League surprises, Batty Borisov, Famagusta and Little Liverpool with Stevie G, their new centurion. Elsewhere, there's the news from Spain, UEFA Cup match-fixing scandal ahoy, your posts and much, much more as we also salute the dawn of another day in the Premier League. Hello, listeners on board today. It's welcome back to Kevin McCarra.
Hi, James.
Hi, Kevin. Hello again, Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
It's been a while, hasn't it, Sean?
It has. Too long.
Too long, yes. And that's a sentence that can be applied to our next guest, Barry Glendenning, the man who divides opinion like Barry the letter N.
I'm back. Have you missed me? I've been away.
We have, and so have our listeners. Except for the ones that didn't. One set of those were meant to be booing, yes. Producer Pete. Right. Where are the boos?
I see we've gone for the comedy sound effects route. Is that wise?
I don't know.
Yeah.
What
is next?
Wise?
You're going to have a bell beside you, which you'll ring any time you crack a gag, and that will be our cue as your flunkies to laugh at you, and then we can rename Football Weekly the Chris Moyles Radio Show.
There'll be a big honk as well, probably, won't there, as well, the big calm.
Good. Nice to see that your time off has enabled you to rediscover your enthusiasm for all things and football. Excellent. And now, I would start. There's been so much action in the Champions League midweek. And I would start with Cluj-Chelsea. Is that wrong? Am I misguided?
It's not wrong.
What happened to Chelsea, first off?
Nothing. They drew a game against a very good team. They were playing away from home. There seemed, going by the TV commentary last night, there seems to be this misconception that Cluj are this team of, you know, sort of non-league butchers, bakers and candlestick makers, which they're not. They have a lot of fancy imports from Brazil and Portugal and elsewhere. Argentina, a few Argentinians. Yeah. They've got a very rich backer and there's no reason why.
Is he very rich?
Apparently he is. According to our man in the know, Jonathan Wilson, he's incredibly wealthy.
Not Barry Glendenning rich, but he is pretty rich.
Right, okay. Oh, that's excellent news. I mean,
he wouldn't be able to get all those players in if he wasn't able to pay them.
That's true. He's a former car salesman, isn't he?
Apparently so, but I think he's moved on to bigger and better things.
I think the biggest thing, of course, is Chelsea's injury problems. Mm. I think the result was, as Barry says, not a bad result. I mean, in fact, I think Chelsea had more attempts on target and all that stuff last night. But, you know, it's like a huge fuss now about players being out, Carvalho and Drogba. Well, Drogba, I think, is a strange one to be too upset about. He came back from the African Nations Cup at the beginning of the year and only scored 6 goals in the rest of the season and clearly wasn't right. I don't think he got injured last night in a freak accident. I thought he got injured because there was continuing problems. And it surprised me that Chelsea went into the season with 2 established forwards in Anelka and Drogba, because I don't think Salomon Kalou as yet fits the bill. So this was something that was like an accident waiting to happen. 2 forwards, one of whom is, shall we say, volatile, and the other, both of them are volatile. One of whom is volatile, another one's volatile, and currently injury-prone with a bad knee.
So he's got knee ligament damage now from that game, so that's another lengthy spell out.
I mean, we don't know at the moment, but people are saying 6 weeks, which sounds, you know, reasonable. And then you've got Carvalho and other
players. Deco and Joe Cole, which I mean, a lot of people have pointed to as perhaps the reason that Chelsea weren't able to create more, the fact that those two, the midfield guys who usually come up with the goods.
Yeah, I think that may be the case. I mean, Florent Malouda is a bit better than he was, but that's still not saying much. You don't see him as a kind of devastating force.
Well, there you go. Problems ahead for Chelsea, perhaps, or not. They currently lead the league, of course. We'll be talking more about their Premier League programme later on. Meantime, of course, Cluj not the only minnows doing well currently in the Champions League. You've got Batty Borisov, the team with the lowest UEFA coefficient ever to make it to the group stages. They held Juve to a 2-2 draw. In fact, they were 2-0 up against Juve. 2 cracking goals from Iaquinta bringing Juve back into it. But quite extraordinary.
Would you see that as a point gained for Batty Borisov or 2 points lost?
I would see that as a point gained. Although Juve, they do seem to have a serious problem in terms of creativity in the midfield, which is why Jovinko, who's the atomic ant, is now in such a strong position with his ongoing contract talks, because they really don't have anybody else. They were after Xavi Alonso for ages in the summer, Juve, and instead they ended up with Christian Poulsen, which is not really the same thing. So that's the thing. They don't really have anyone to generate anything.
I know that I annoyed Susie last time, but even with Roma winning against 10 men last night.
Yeah.
The Italian representation is quite thin, isn't it? Unless Inter turned out to be a powerful source. I know Milan won it 2 years ago as a last gasp of that generation, but don't you think the Serie A has become quite weak now?
No.
No.
Why would I think it's weak?
Well,
I think
do you think Juventus are as good as a top four team in England, or do you think Roma are? Or?
Wait. I don't think Serie A is weak now. I think the Premier League has become unbelievably strong.
Well, it's relative. I mean, okay. It has the same effect.
Is it weaker than the Premier League?
Yes,
it probably is. If you put the teams together, I think the pace and the level of skill of the players that the Premier League is able to. I mean, you've always had pace in the Premier League, and now you're allying to that a tactical nous, if you like, through all the coaching inputs, and a level of skill from some of the players who are coming in that is unparalleled anywhere in the world. That includes Spain and Italy and Germany. Mm. However, I don't think that Serie A is weaker, say, than it was. I think it's coming back, actually,
I mean, I don't think it's a good thing. My point is, at the moment, we're currently left with England and Spain. You know,
I don't think that the Spanish league is stronger than the Italian league.
Come on.
Barcelona and Real Madrid are
team. No, I think there are two teams in Spain that are very, very strong.
No, that's more than two.
Wrong. Yeah. I think there are about five or six teams in Spain that are strong, which I think marks out from it and the Premier League. Villarreal are a strong side. Atletico Madrid are a strong side.
No, Atletico Madrid are a very strong side.
Then you've got obviously Real and Barcelona.
Right. Would you include Real in that?
Improving. What, Real Madrid?
Yeah.
Well, they're the Spanish champions. They've gone away and beat Zenit St. Petersburg.
Inter are the Italian champions. So someone's going to be champions of...
Real Madrid were far from convincing against Zenit St. Petersburg and were very, very lucky to win.
I take your point. I think the thing is that, especially in this country, I think probably across Europe, there was such an image attached to the Italians because of what happened in the 90s, where there was virtually not not a European Cup final that didn't include an Italian competitor. And often in the UEFA Cup, it was two Italian competitors. And against that kind of heritage, naturally, the inclination is to think, the Italians are kind of washed up. But I don't see it that way myself. I think they have struggled, and I think they still have lost a little bit of the tactical superiority which they used to have. And it's funny how one-dimensional they now seem sometimes when they come up against...
Did you notice, James, Platini saying that Italy wouldn't be a good place for a European Championship because the grounds aren't much good?
I mean, that is certainly true.
They failed to keep up.
That is another ridiculous thing for Platini to say, because what are the grounds like in Ukraine and Poland right now?
The point
is, when you get assigned a tournament, you go and build grounds or you update grounds.
I'm just talking about a general mood. I mean, people seem to think Italy's been a bit of a letdown.
But I was in San Siro last week. I saw Inter Villecce. I mean, San Siro, to me, is a wonderful ground. But what I found quite interesting was looking at Mourinho, sort of his team in the flesh for the first time. It was very similar in a way to how he was with Chelsea in the first season. He was very pragmatic, didn't give anything away. But the difference was he played three defensive-ish midfielders, Cambiasso, Vieira and Zanetti, and there was no sort of one in the Deco role, no one in the Lampard role that provided the link between a sort of midfield and an attack. And he had Adriano on the wing. It just didn't quite work. And I think
similar to yesterday, actually, the game against Werder Bremen. I know it's a point that the Italians are making as well. You have a huge squad. You have any number of great soloists who are all trying to do their little solos yesterday, but you don't have an orchestra leader as yet. And people are now beginning to say, OK, Jose, you've been there a certain amount of time. When are we going to see the Inter style, your style of Inter play? Also, one or two comments, especially in the Gazette this morning, with a rather kind of... disparaging reaction to the game, that he seemed particularly dimesso, they would say, rather resigned to the game. He wasn't jumping up and down on the sideline the way they ordinarily were. But sorry, Kevin, coming back to that, it might seem, given the way that the Spanish sides have been able to impress with their flair and style, etc., that Serie A isn't as good. But having seen in the last couple of weeks a Milan derby this weekend that featured some brilliant play, before that a Milan performance that coincidentally they just happened to be on against Lazio that featured two goals that were better than the goal that everyone on Match of the Day was raving about from Giovanni, saying, this is going to be goal of the season. Well, that one game contained two goals that were even better than that, for my money. I would say that the quality in Serie A right now is I'm not going to say better than the Premier League. They're different kind of leagues, but I think it's very, very good.
It hasn't been like some kind of financial decline. They just don't seem the same powerhouse anymore.
Well, they're not. But having said that, do you know, the Premier League spent more than any other league during the summer, but one league came very, very close behind it. And it wasn't the German league, it wasn't the Spanish, it was Serie A. They are actually spending money again.
I think there are 2 points here. There's the one point, which is the teams at the top. And in the big four in England are just far ahead of pretty much every other team. And there's actually what makes a great and exciting league. Now, on a Sunday, I will prefer watching the games, Spanish games on at 6 or 8 than often I will watch the Premier games earlier on in the day because they are more attack-minded. You don't know who's going to win. And I think the Spanish league, to me, is a better league than the Premier League.
If you were able to watch the Italian league this season, I think you might say the same. There's one other thing about the Italian league. But, I mean, that's an issue because you cannot see. I mean, I saw Lazio play Sampdoria. They were brilliant. And you would put that up against any Spanish or a Premier League game in terms of spectacle and quality, you know, technical quality of play. I think the fact that you cannot actually watch the games is a major blow. Because the media in this country, certainly where we are based before we blast off every week, is very skewed, I think, against Serie A at the moment. And secondly, the fact that even when it is on television, Italians, they cook very well. They do a lot of things very well. They don't make television, in my humble opinion, very well. I think the coverage...
Is that what drew you there?
Can we have a ring of the bell for
that? James, can I ask you, you're a professional in the TV world and all that. Yes. Clearly, people don't want to buy it. I mean, I'd like to have it on TV. Is it just, do they think the viewing figures are not going to be satisfactory?
I got rang up, bizarrely, by the guy who sells, who's in charge of selling Italian football abroad, who took exception to some remarks I'd made in the Gazetta last week when I've... rang up by a journalist, and I'd said that apparently they seem to have asked too much money, because it is a bit of a mystery. There is clearly a huge or a sizable bedrock of interest. You know, there's an English magazine about Italian football's various websites, and you don't get that for Spanish or German. And he said that they offered it to two satellite sports broadcasters, the obvious two. And one said that they were only dedicating themselves to one foreign league, and when that contract ended, they would take a view. But I don't think that's going to happen. And the other one, Setanta, they went a certain way down the line, and then I think there were issues over the lack of exclusivity of the contract.
Speaking of that, I've heard of Setanta. There's rumours that they're struggling with their to break even with their Premiership, and they may well sell. But
on today's Football Weekly Extra, James Richardson answers your question on the crisis involved. I have no idea. Are they?
Well, there are rumours about that they're only breaking even, and I just wondered.
Only breaking even. I would think they'd probably be delighted. I have no idea what the.
I would have thought, seeing as they've only been broadcasting them for what, two seasons, that they'd be delighted to break even.
Listen, there's loads more to talk about from the humble old Champions League. So let's take a quick musical interlude and come back with those. Right, with the bindings and gags safely applied to Barry Glendinning, we can continue with this week's broadcast. Now, we've done all that, and you got Famagusta, eh? First ever Cypriot win in the Champions League, a 3-1 victory over Panathinaikos. They're going to be taking on Inter, our pals there. But let's move on, eh? Because you got Liverpool, Robbie Keane scoring a goal, and a fine goal too. You saw this game, didn't you, Barry?
Robbie Keane scored a very good goal, and not the goal of a man who looked as if he was short of confidence, it has to be said, because normally, you know, might have ricocheted in off his arse or his knee or something. But his thunder was stolen by Stevie Mee scoring his 100th goal for Liverpool.
Fine goal
and a
too.
Fine goal that was too.
Admittedly, it was against a PSV side that produced the worst Dutch performance since Steve McLaren's funny accent, that from Andy Hunter in the Guardian. Nice one, that. However, I thought Liverpool, who were often rubbishing, looked particularly good. Incredible to think of the struggle they had against Standard Liège only a few weeks ago. I just wanted to ask a question, because there's always this kind of big thing of, are they going to go for a cup? Is Benitez giving enough attention to the league? At this stage, at least, before the fixtures get too congested, could this brilliant run of form in the cup help them rather than hinder them in their quest for the title? It'll be a big boost to morale. He seems to be going with a settled side as well, Benitez.
Well, I think especially if they make light work of the Champions League, then you can ease off a bit later on in the group, and that helps too. The squad, as Benitez says, has improved. You kind of wonder about some of the wider parts of the team, don't you, the wings. But if Torres coming back to form, that's an enormous difference. If Keane's scoring as well, then it does give you a different view of the team.
Arsenal bouncing back from the weekend with that 4-0 defeat of Porto. Kevin, briefly, you were there.
They played very well, but the defence under a little pressure, still was laughable at times.
They didn't concede from a corner this time.
No, but almost. I think Clichy had to hack the ball away when it's quite funny. This is a team that Arsene Wenger must have picked to play. They had a very small centre forward who was never going to outjump anyone. And I think Toure and Gallas breathed a sigh of relief. But even then, they could have lost a goal from a corner. So I think Sunderland on Saturday will be a more exacting test than Porto were.
Porto had Hulk come on to raucous delight in the game. And he was one of only three comedy names playing Champions League football. There was Coolio, played for CFR Cluj last night against
Chelsea. Double points for Coolio because his first name is Juan. So if you... Juan Coolio.
All right. Magnificent. Yeah. And the Shakhtar Donetsk goalkeeper was Franco Costanza.
Right.
Which I thought was particularly chucklesome.
Because of that show Seinfeld that you go on about.
Seinfeld.
Right. That show, Seinfeld.
I've never seen it.
You've never heard Dusty in Memphis. You've never seen Seinfeld.
I might have heard Dusty in Memphis. I just don't have a kind of photographic recall of the album.
But you come across as, you know, the very cultured, you know, sophisticated.
And I am. I came second in the Satanta Inter sports quiz, quiz.
Who won? No one remembers who came second.
Well, tell you what, the £15 in my pocket remembers. That's all the souvenir I need of that. Man United. 3-0 over AB Alborg.
AB Alborg were hopeless.
Right.
And I wouldn't, you know, Dimitar Berbatov got off the mark. He missed a sitter, then scored two, didn't celebrate them. I thought it was because he was being, you know, Thierry Henry, sort of too cool for school. But he claims he didn't celebrate because he was angry for missing the first opportunity, and he should have been.
I saw Alborg at Celtic, and I think they're the poorest team I've seen in the group stage of the Champions League, although they got a 0-0 draw against Celtic.
Failed to score at Celtic. That doesn't sound promising at all. even less happy than Dimitar Berbatov, Sir Alex, what's the latest bee in his bonnet?
Oh, he's annoyed. I'm not sure why he's only annoyed now, but he's announced a boycott against the written press.
He's not. He says he's not going to help them anymore. So is that no more?
Because he was always such a huge help up to now.
How are we going to tell? That's what I don't know.
He's not going to help them. So if anyone asks for an interview. Interestingly, a lot of papers didn't report this boycott because they're obviously worried that if they did, he would carry it out. But, I mean, it's... So what if he doesn't help them? Who cares? He doesn't have that much of interest to say. It's just a disgraceful way to treat the club's fans, and the press should just not cover Manchester United's matches. Matches they should not show the highlights of their matches, and it wouldn't be long before he'd come crawling back because his bosses would make him.
But you know, the strange thing, the matter in dispute too is one of the least controversial things I can think of. He said, "Oh, there's not much improvement left in Chelsea," and the press kind of interpreted that as, you know, they're getting a bit over the hill. Which wasn't a million miles away from what Ferguson was saying. He's now trying to backpedal. Oh, I wasn't saying the past, I'm just saying they can't get any better.
Why is he getting so upset about that now? Because he said it like several months
ago. Because Chelsea are doing a bit better than he hoped.
Oh, yeah. So you blanket boycott of all Man United coverage, Barry, yeah?
I think, why not?
Why not? Okay.
Because I think the advertisers might have something to do. And the view figure suddenly fell off a cliff. The advertisers fell off a cliff. I think it may be the...
We don't have advertisers.
We don't, know, but...
We don't have viewing figures either.
No, but I think if ITV's coverage of the Champions League was suddenly without Manchester United, I think they would be...
No, but it's BBC has a problem with. So if they just didn't show Manchester United...
Tell you what, listeners, address your own conscience.
The Glazers would force Ferguson to...
I'm with Barry on this track. So we're moving on. No more on that. That's for sure. Okay, yeah. Let's see if we can contact our pal Dr. Lowe in Madrid. I'm guessing, although who knows with his globe-trotting habits. Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello.
Woof. Hello, Sid. How are you? Are you at home today?
I'm at home today. Yeah.
Ah, fantastic news. You caught Zenit Real Madrid, I imagine, which was regarded as probably the pick of the midweek games.
Yeah, I thought Zenit were brilliant in the second half. Real Madrid played really, really well for the first 25, 30 minutes or so and looked like they were completely in control. And then in the second half, Zenit really just kind of took the game by the scruff of the neck and just destroyed Real Madrid. I thought they were really, really unlucky not to win.
Mm. Or their check bounced or something. I'm not quite sure what happened. I'm joking, of course. I'm just making reference to that story which has surfaced in the Spanish press, in El País, I believe, and... as you're no doubt all over this, that man Baltasar Garzon, who tried to bring Pinochet over to Spain to prosecute him for his human rights abuses, and now conducting Operación Troika against the Russian mafia. And what's turned up in the wiretaps, Sid, allegedly?
Baltasar Garzon is absolutely incredible, really, because he seems to be the only judge in the whole of Spain, or at least the only sort of person doing any kind of... he's kind of judge, public prosecutor, and an all-round kind of moral guardian of the entire country. It's quite bizarre. I mean, he's the one, as you said, he's the one that tried to do Pinochet. He's the one who's behind this current attempt now to reopen some of the common graves from the Spanish Civil War for both sides of the conflict. He seems to be the only one doing any cases ever, and yeah. So of course he's at the heart of absolutely everything, as he always is.
Well, basically, the allegations centre around Zenit's progress to the final and then victory in the final of the UEFA Cup last year, and involve allegations against Bayern Munich and, of course, Rangers, who they played in the final. Certainly Bayern Munich saying the whole thing's ridiculous and they should publish the transcripts of the tapes, which it's alleged in the papers feature said Russian mafioso announcing before the game that it's going to end 4-0, which it then did, and talking about a £50 million payment to a club. But obviously that's all been denied. Still, pretty interesting stuff, Sean Ingle.
Well, it is, and I know the Zenit have released a statement saying the whole thing's rubbish and are threatening to sort of sue the sweet behinds off El Pais. So it's a very interesting situation.
I mean, I find this partly absurd. I went to the UEFA Cup final, and I know Rangers. The idea that they threw the UEFA Cup final is beyond description. Rangers would have loved to win that trophy, first European trophy since 1972. They worked their socks off to try and contain Zenit St. Petersburg. They just weren't good enough. There was no fix in
the
that
idea
game.
That any team would think they have to pay Rangers to lose to get their hands. The trophies equally absurd.
Rangers put up really tremendous resistance in that final. I think it's most unjust. Incidentally, Zenit St. Petersburg quite low in the Russian league, so sadly next European season they may not be in Europe at all. The kind of Dick Advocaat era seems to be coming to a close. He's expected to leave the club. I was talk of it anyway. So, but I think they've played nice football, and that's something you can't arrange by bribery alone.
That's certainly what Zenit are saying as well. I mean, you know, it's not just that, as you say, they played very nice football and they were a very good side. And their argument has been, well, hang on a minute, you can talk about the final against Rangers if you want, but have a look at the performance against Bayern Munich in the semis, have a look at the games against Rangers, have a look at the performances all the way through the tournament. And you know, Zenit aren't a team that won the UEFA Cup because the UEFA Cup is a joke, which of course it is. They played very, very good teams in last year's UEFA Cup. It wasn't that they, you know, that they got there by kind of stumbling their way to a final and then had to buy the final game. Obviously, you never know until you see the actual evidence. But one thing that hasn't come out, of course, in all this is the actual content of the evidence, or the content of the reason for the case.
Interesting, Sid. Well, in the meantime, then, having poured a certain amount of cold water and poo-pooed those early allegations, let's just comment on Zenit Real Madrid. Villa Support Group with a magnificent minute by minute on the Football Weekly Post, pointing out Real Madrid, or suggesting that Real Madrid might claim they knew what they were doing in this game with that 2-1 win. But Pepe was the only defender who looked the remotest bit convincing out there, he says. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's right. Pepe is a superb defender. He's getting better and better. He's very strong. He's powerful. He comes across. He covers for other players. I wouldn't go so far as to say he was the only one who knew what he was doing, but certainly compared to Sergio Ramos. Madrid a little bit fortunate, but then, of course, everybody's talking about Madrid might have been fortunate, but they have a certain Rutigus Johannes van Nistelrooy, who is just scoring goal after goal after goal. He's got the best goal-per-game ratio since any striker at Real Madrid since Alfredo Di Stefano.
My word.
Sid, speaking about fortunate, Barcelona were very lucky against Shakhtar yesterday.
Yeah, they were incredibly lucky. And it's interesting, this, because for the first time in ages, I mean, Barcelona have been hideously brittle in recent years. They've been a side that have dominated games and been beaten, that have allowed themselves to concede goals late on. And you've always thought to yourself, well, they just lack that kind of steely ability to win. But they've now won the last three games quite late, quite against the run of play, because they tend to dominate games. But last night it was against the run of play. They were absolutely awful.
Well, they were losing until the, what, 87th minute?
87 minute, and the first of the two to make it 2-1 for them after being 1-0 down, it has caused a bit of controversy, because the ball was booted out of play and Shakhtar were waiting for Barcelona to give it back, and all standing there saying, go on then, give it back. And Barcelona just carried on and scored, admittedly with quite a lot of help from the Shakhtar goalkeeper, who was really quite awful. But the Shakhtar, of course, are jumping up and down. I must admit, take away the fact that it's Barcelona, take away the fact that it's Shakhtar, it doesn't matter. I'm absolutely delighted that a team has scored after the other team has booted the ball out and expected it back, because I'm absolutely sick of teams using that to their advantage. Oh no, we've got a player injured. Oh, he's, you know, he's really dying, and then next thing you know, he's up.
He wasn't injured, said it. He wasn't injured at all, was he, the guy?
It was absolutely nothing wrong with it, and, no. And then they expect the ball back. And I think the best thing that can happen in this is that teams consistently score goals when other teams are expecting it back, and it's the only way anyone will learn not to boot the ball out and not to expect it back again.
Oh, harsh words there from Sid Lowe. Listen, Sid, to race through one or two other things, Villarreal beat Celtic 1-0, nothing really to say there apart from, you know, sorry about that, Celtic, etc. Atletico 2-1 against Marseille. Hakun Aguero again looking outstanding, but more importantly, it's a boy, Sid. And is it true that, Marco say that Atletico are preparing a contract for the newborn baby as soon as he pops out?
Well, sort of. It's not entirely true. What happened was that Enrique Cerezo, the Atletico Madrid president, said tongue in cheek, "Oh, we better sign him up," because obviously he's going to have some pretty good genes, isn't he? Having his
this is Aguero's son with the daughter of Maradona.
Yeah, for anyone who was watching Sky last night, I thought Sky were embarrassing with their lack of research in the city last night. Oh, apparently he's going out with Diego Maradona's daughter. Apparently he's about to have a bloody kid with Diego Maradona's daughter. and I thought Sky were embarrassing last night.
Well, yeah, also there. David Platt saying, I think it was Keyes asked a question where he said, because I got a bit upset about that. He said,
I thought it was pathetic.
Is he going to start making a name for himself, do you think, with performances this? Like, I'm sorry, this is like one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, what about the Olympics? What about last season?
Has he learned a few tricks from Cristiano Ronaldo?
I was absolutely infuriated watching David Platt last night sitting there going, he might be quite good this time. Quite good. He was the best player in Spain last season, which is not exactly a footballing backwater.
Platt surely, though, must be the worst commentator out there.
He's not. Trevor Francis is worse, and he's got that permanent cold.
See Sky in Spain?
I've got an extremely large satellite dish.
Well, good for you, sir. All right.
Cerezo said that the Atletico Madrid president said, "Oh well, we better sign him up," which obviously wasn't meant as a serious. We will sign your daughter.
I tell you what,
it's worth a go, isn't it?
If
you got a bit of Maradona in there and a bit of Kun Aguero in there, it's going to be a great football. And Aguero, as I was saying last year, is continuing to play.
But that doesn't really work, though. How many great artists who marry another famous person end up having famous kids? Not that many.
Great artists.
Ziggy Marley was no Bob Marley.
Ziggy Marley, that's brilliant. And Julian Lennon was bloody awful.
Yeah, it was. Fair point there.
Let's not go to Stella McCartney.
Right. No, but
there have been quite a lot of footballers who've been born into footballing families.
Frank Lampard, for example.
Been pretty good. Yeah.
Who was it said that Jordi Cruyff took after his mother?
that's the thing. That this is a unique occasion where you have two absolutely phenomenal footballing families involved.
The kid will probably grow up to be a complete computer nerd or some sort of brilliant academic or something.
Well, that'd be quite nice, wouldn't it? Yeah. Excellent. Sid Lowe in Spain, thank you very much for that. We look forward to further participation further on down the line. Monday, perhaps?
Monday will be, yeah.
Lovely. Thanks, Sid.
Thank you then. Cheers.
Cheerio. Well, more top excitements on Football Weekly Extra right after this.
Football Weekly on Guardian.co.uk.
Your post, plenty to talk about this week. Templeton the Rat wants to know about Rob Stiles not being punished. This despite the fact that the bloke who gave the red card against John Terry that got overturned got busted down to League 2.
But the John Terry thing has sort of set a lot of precedents now, because any player who gets a red card for anything can now appeal it on the grounds that John Terry had a perfectly valid red card overturned, so why shouldn't my perfectly valid red card?
But it was surprising that Rob Stiles wasn't, because that was a pretty horrendous decision.
Is anything surprising anymore?
No, nothing surprising.
Consistency has never been one of the FA's strong points.
Yeah. H-Rock, why does Jimbo always mention the fact they've not got much time? Surely as a podcast rather than a radio show, for example, they are unconstrained by time and can go on for as long as they like. It's not, technically, you're right, but there's something to do with, I don't know, Sean, can you explain this?
Well, the longer the show is, the longer it takes to download, the more boring it is.
Right. Okay.
Plus, we have to book our studio time, I believe, because there are other top podcasts being generated in.
And also, we went to go for lunch, don't we?
And the largest part of it is we couldn't be arsed staying in here any longer than is absolutely necessary.
I would prefer not to, as an image of me with a big clock around my neck, like Flavor Flav from Public Enemy, boy, and all that. Now,
listeners, what you're missing there is actually James doing the Flavor Flav from a gesture, which he probably could have got away with maybe 20 years ago, but now, and
it actually looks like him trying to wade through some chest high water.
Maybe that's what Flavor Flav is.
Palsied hand gesture,
right? Okay. We're finding it funny because we can see it. Sorry about that, listeners. Men Call Me Phil, who says there's something he's been wanting to ask after recent blogs. I think this really relates to the Susie Campanile controversy and the fact that she pronounces Italian names properly. If you actually know how to pronounce a word properly, ask Men Call Me Phil. Should you continue to mispronounce it? Are there people out there who do this? Are there still folk who wander around saying Ibiza and Mallorca? Majorca. No, he's a Mallorca on principle. Interesting point, actually. Isn't it?
Well, it's not really, but it's like if someone gets your name wrong.
Yeah.
Or you get some, you know, well, and then they get it wrong up for so long that you sort of don't want to correct them. Like, there's a guy in my hometown who calls me Garrett all the time, and I just don't correct him now because it would be too embarrassing.
I'm not sure that's what Men Call Me Phil is talking about. I think he's talking about.
I'm not sure what Men Call Me Phil is talking about.
Well, he's talking about when you're doing a report on something like saying, well, it was a terrific game, et cetera, and Juventus. Then when you're speaking in an English accent and suddenly certain words get spoken,
you know,
in
James, do we talk about Paris or do we call it Paris? I mean, at what point do you insist? Do we have to say Milan? Or
I say Milan.
I know you do. Is it compulsory? That's my point.
When I was in Milan last week, I said Milan, and my wife was just said, "Why you keep calling it Milan?" She was very, very angry, and I blamed you. And
okay. But you don't.
We had a serious domestic with your wife over the pronunciation of
yeah,
Milan.
And basically, James, all
is your marriage heading for the rocks?
All because of James Richardson.
But would you call Paris, Paris?
Paris Saint-Germain? Yeah, I would say, Paris Saint-Germain.
No, but if I said I'm going to Paris, you say, no, you're going to Paris.
No, but it's funny. When you're talking about the football team, it is natural to call them Paris Saint-Germain. Yeah. And I don't see what's wrong with saying Paris Saint-Germain.
I'm with you, Jim.
Yeah, Kevin, do you call the capital but the second city, Glasgow?
Glasgow. Of course I do. It's compulsory.
Lance Joburg has a suggestion. Wouldn't it be great, says Lance, if once in a while you could invite one of the listeners, how many do you think there are, for goodness sake, Lance, to join you, football pundits, in near-Earth orbit? Also, Lance Joburg is concerned about smirky tones whenever we talk about Bilic's possible ultra-right leanings. And again, that's one that refuses to go away. There's nothing smirky about it. We genuinely, I've never seen anything, and I think we said this on Monday, that confirms that Bilic has. I've never seen anything from him that suggests that he's fascist or racist or anything.
I found Lance Joburg's opening request slightly more disturbing, and did say on the blog that having listeners in here is a terrible idea and I won't stand for it.
Well, there you go.
Apparently they've tried it on the music podcast.
Have they?
With varying degrees of success, but they don't have any listeners, so it sort of saves time if they get their listener into the studio to watch it live. Then they don't have to bother recording it or putting it up.
Just go around the house.
Yeah.
Good. Now, the Premier League weekend. Many interesting games here, I'm sure you'll all agree. Manchester City against Liverpool. Crikey. Man City, 15 goals in their last five matches at home. Liverpool, though, they've only lost one of their last 21 Premier League games. How do you see this one going, Kevin?
I was at the Man City game at Wigan at weekend. Ooh. And it was really interesting to see how bad Micah Richards and Richard Dunn were in that game.
Really?
I'm one of the people who was guilty. When Micah Richards appeared, you thought, God, this guy is terrific. But he's gone backwards a bit at the moment, and maybe that's a natural thing for a young player coming through. But Dunn surprised me. I always think he's going to be a rock in the team. They had a very poor game against Wigan, although it was entirely predictable that Wigan, at home, good players, fired up, were going to harass them and close them down, as they did very impressively. But Man City were very, very poor. I'm also thinking of Chelsea winning 3-1 at Eastlands. Mm-hmm. Again, a team with pretensions to be in the upper reaches of the table has to defend better than that.
Right, okay, so you're leaning towards a Liverpool victory there. Sean and Barry, would your money be sitting on the Reds?
I can't predict games with Liverpool anymore. I just never get them right.
Oh, okay, and Sean, you're shaking your head as well. Okay, Blackburn Rovers against Manchester United. No Liverpool involved there. Interesting, Sir Alex Ferguson's win percentage against teams managed by his former players is 75%. His protege's win percentage is just 10%. 5%. Having said that, Red Devils only won 5 of their last 11 in the league.
Yeah, I would fancy United to win that one. I don't think Blackburn are as strong as they were last season. I think the really interesting one this weekend, and where there might be a possible, not upset, but maybe a slight surprise, is the Chelsea-Villa game with the injury problems Chelsea had earlier. Mm. They're looking at the odds on Betfair. Chelsea are very, very short, and you could back Villa to draw at 7-2 or to win at 7-1. Now, I think Villa might get something at Chelsea.
Next on our infomercial. We're actually on that very, very subject, because whilst the Blues have not been beaten in their last 85 Premier League games at Stamford Bridge, they've only actually won 2 of the last 6 there, and even Tottenham got a point there. Even Tottenham. So there you go. 4-4 that ended last season.
No, I think we should talk before we go on about the whole Sol Campbell thing, which is one of the issues that's been,
we haven't got to that
been
game,
bubbling
yet.
On. But yeah, it's Portsmouth are playing Stoke this weekend.
All right, let's talk about that.
Which you would expect. I would assume Portsmouth to win, although they're coming back from Europe. They're playing very, very late on Thursday. So maybe not. But I think it's really interesting what's happened over the last since the chance when Spurs played Portsmouth last weekend. For those who didn't hear it, one of the songs was "Soul, Soul, Wherever You May Be, Not Long Now Till Lunacy, and We Won't Give a Rude Word When You're Hanging from a Tree, You Judas, Very Rude Word with HIV." We often kick up a stink, when rightly so, when Spanish fans make monkey chants England players, or when England players are playing abroad. Why isn't there more being done to spot these fans in the video?
And the police are doing what then?
Well, they're talking about, possibly looking into it, possibly making arrests.
Well, haven't the police asked the FA to deal with it?
Well, they're kind of bouncing it backwards and forwards at the moment.
I think it's a case for making the club play behind closed doors. I know this was an away game for Spurs, and therefore only a small number of Spurs fans were involved. But I think
how many Spurs were involved?
A small number of Spurs. Fratton Park is a small ground, and therefore the away support would not have been huge. But I think it's a case for saying that maybe these clubs should have play behind closed doors at home for a game. I mean, it punches everyone, but it certainly makes
for their
point.
Fans, the way Spurs are playing right now.
And it's not just Spurs, obviously.
Of course.
Whenever Manchester United go to Liverpool, the horrible references to Hillsborough or to Munich will be mentioned. Yeah. And it goes on and on. You just think something should be done. And I think we have slight double standards in England, because we will criticise foreign clubs, and we very rarely criticise what's sung on our own grounds. And I think it's a lot better than it was. And thankfully, we don't get bananas being thrown at players as we did in the 70s and 80s. But it's still, players should not be subjected to that kind of
absolutely. OK, well, good point. Anyway, what do you think about Portsmouth Stoke City? That's pretty much a home banker, isn't it?
I wouldn't say so.
A lot of bankers at home these days.
It depends on whether Portsmouth concede throw-ins inside their own half or not, I suppose.
Fair point. Now, what else you got? Everton against Newcastle United. What's the latest on the consortium? The South Africans, apparently, are familiar with black and white setups, of course, but are they now going to be are they taking over? Is that going to happen? Are we ever going to see? I was going to say Roy Kinnear, but it's Joe Kinnear on the bench at St James's Park.
Well, not if he's got a touchline ban, you won't. But how long's about a touchline ban?
Two more matches.
Yeah.
So I think his first match where he'll be able to sit on the bench is after the next round of international.
Yeah, Man City.
I also see the pressure for Everton to sell up is getting more and more intense. I mean, it's a lot of problems there.
Well,
I was going to say, it's quite interesting, David Moyes, because I know he's hasn't entirely been happy in the last year or two. There were quite strong rumours linking him with the Newcastle job when Keegan took it. I don't think he would certainly take it now, but he's not an entirely happy man, I sense, Kevin.
Yeah, this thing about I haven't signed the contract because of certain clauses, this goes back to May or April. I mean, it's not just a technicality that's
he basically is not convinced by the future at Everton.
Well, yes, I think we've all said he's gotten as high as fourth, which is incredible, in 2005. But the only way now is down, and his reputation might go down with them. It's a shame, because Bill Kenwright's a great bloke. I mean, if you talk to him, he's enthusiastic, passionate. He's not some kind of mogul manipulating the club for his own personal ends, but he doesn't have the wealth to take them where they want to go.
Right. Now, Everton, Newcastle, just to make two quick little statistical points, all of Everton's points this season have come in away games against promoted teams. Curious that. And, of course, Newcastle have lost their last 5 in a row. Spurs are taking on Hull City, who have the best away record in the Premier League. I think, Chelsea have got even better, but Hull, amazing stuff. And Spurs have not won any of their last 7 Premier League games at home.
There's no reason why they win this one either. Hull are a much better team than there.
There you go. Sean, anything to add to that?
I think Spurs, problems they've got. They need a defensive midfielder. They need their defence is a mess. But the players they've got to start playing at some point. But I wouldn't surprise me if they didn't get a result against Krakow, which will be going on as this comes out. But you would think they've got to start playing a little bit better.
I mean, I think Wandy Ramos is not to blame for a lot of things, but he's got a squad there that is capable of doing better than this, and he has to take some share of responsibility.
I have a feeling they might bounce back this weekend. But anyway,
at what point are people going to stop going plucky little Hull? They're a good side. Mm-hmm. They're not in a false position, and they're doing very well. I've seen no evidence that would suggest...
I think they are slightly in a false position. If you say that...
They won't be sixth at the end of the season, surely.
Okay, possibly not. But when are people going to acknowledge what a good job Phil Brown has done and what a good team he's got together?
I think people have been.
I was listening to a rival broadcast or podcast
Judas,
the other
shame
day.
On you. You should be hanging from a tree.
And it was all, you know, not... Hull got very little praise. It was all, you know, everything was focused on Arsenal's shortcomings, not...
Right.
The manner in which Hull rings around them, but I presume you discussed this on Monday.
You know, Hull were 600-1 when they were 1-0 down, and you could have got them to win that game at Betfair. Someone put £10 on,
right,
and would have won £6,000.
My word. I'm just visualising the inside of your brain, all these numbers swirling round and round.
You don't want to look in.
No. But then there you go. Well, listeners, just as we leave the listeners, who can, of course, always contact us via guardian.co.uk/football and then find...
But they're not allowed to come in here.
They're not.
We won't have that.
Can I tell you, it would just be a
rank
disappointment.
We need a blog buffer zone.
Yeah. It would just be... It wouldn't be... Yeah. And you can also go to our Facebook page, which you go to Facebook and put in Football Weekly, I'm guessing. Yeah. And you can play fantasy football. You certainly can. And listen, just before we leave, did you want to offer a little...
So you're asking them to blog,
yeah,
play fantasy football,
yes,
and go on Facebook?
Yep.
What kind of nerds do you think listen to this show?
Well, I'm sure there are people...
You could also meet real people, go out and have a drink.
Right.
You know, or go and do something life-affirming or self-improving.
Well, I'm sure they'll do that as well.
But Facebook is about connecting with your friends.
No, it's about connecting with losers.
No, it's not.
It is.
No, give me an example. Nick Harper, who we both know, recently had a couple of twins.
Congratulations,
Mrs. Harper.
Yeah.
You know, when Nick was able to post those, all the pictures of all the friends, you probably haven't seen them. You probably don't care, Baz. But they were lovely. They were to see a doting father with his
children. If you're so eager to see Nick Harper's children, why don't you go around and visit them? I prefer meeting actual people and interacting with them on a face-to-face basis.
Despite your experiences here in the pod, you prefer...
I must say, it's one of my great joys of being an old git. I don't have to bother about Facebook and all that. I just pay no attention to it.
Oh, okay, well, there you go.
Me too.
You won't meet Kevin or Barry there on Facebook, but you might meet some other friends. And
they're not actually friends, are they? Let's face it. They're just people, disembodied email addresses.
Right.
For losers.
Well, I could make a more philosophical point here, but I'm not going to.
Be like James Richardson's final thought.
Surely all the contact that we have with the outside world is only virtual. It just depends on what kind of digital medium it comes through to us in, whether that created by our own synapses or that through a computer. All right, well, listen, that's it then for another broad-ranging romp through the midweek, etc., wide world of football. Another one will be on the way on Monday. So do make sure you join us for that. Many thanks to Barry, Sean, Kevin, producer Pete, and you, the listener. We'll be speaking to you next week.